7:15. It was a sad day yesterday in the Dome, but it was a thrilling night in Baton Rouge Saturday night. It was a long night in Baton Rouge, but I'm going to tell you what, Jeff Palermo, how about them Tigers, huh?
What a ball game, Tommy. What a game.
Tell me, I don't even know where to start with this. I guess, you know, there are so many things that could have changed the game. Maybe if, what's the receiver's name, Tim? Trey Harris doesn't drop that ball on the second play of the game. Maybe
yes.
Things turn around.
Yeah. Well,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. And Tim brought this point up, which is a good one. Maybe if Whit Weeks gets ejected, maybe Tigers don't win because this guy had what 18 tackles, which is
18
crazy.
Tackles. Yeah. And there was a spot in the game for those that don't remember or didn't see the game. There was a spot in the game where Whit Weeks was facing an ejection for a targeting penalty, a helmet to helmet hit that. Thank goodness for LSU. It did not go against them after they looked at it on instant replay. They determined that the quarterback, Jackson Dart, was going down. Therefore, Whit Weeks' helmet went down, and it was still helmet-to-helmet contact, but they didn't consider it malicious or intentional. So he stayed in the game and had a career night, 18 tackles. LSU's defense, I thought, was just fantastic. To me, that was the story of the game. I mean, the touchdown pass between Garrett Nussmeier and Kyren Lacy is another legendary play. You'll see that when you think about all the great highlights in Tiger Stadium. That one is going to go in there with so many of the other great touchdown passes that have taken place over the 100 years of that stadium. But it really was the LSU defense that kept them in the game until the offense can finally get on track. What a huge drive at the end of regulation by Garrett Nussmeier, converting a couple times on fourth down to get the ball into the end zone. And then on the first play of overtime, LSU decides to win it with the touchdown pass to Kyren Lacy. But the six sacks on Jackson Dart. How about the in the red zone? Ole Miss just goes three of six. Not three of six as far as scoring touchdowns once getting into the red zone, but they only had three scores out of the six. So that was, to me, the big key in this game.
Yeah, Zay Alexander had a great game.
Yes.
Ashton Stamps had a good game.
Well, actually, Zay Alexander got the game ball. Mm. How about that? If you look at the Pro Football Focus ratings, Zay Alexander graded the highest out of any defensive player on LSU's team. Whit Weeks was two, but Zay Alexander was huge. He was coming back from a concussion. He's only played in a couple of games this season as he was returning from an ACL, so he wasn't there for the USC game. And he was a difference maker. I don't know if Trey Harris was 100%. He's the star wide receiver for Ole Miss. He did have a touchdown catch in the game, a terrific play to make up for that drop pass that he had earlier in the game. But the fact that LSU's corners played as well as they did, Ashton Stamps and Zay Alexander, I mean, it's part of the reason why LSU didn't give up 55 points this time around and 706 yards of offense. The LSU defensive secondary played really well, and Brian Kelly was true to his word. He said it after the South Alabama game that they were going to find three guys that as far as to play that safety positions, and they were going to go with those three guys. And Jarden Gilbert, Sage Ryan, and Major Burns played 95% of the snaps on defense. So they went with those three guys along with Stamps and Alexander at cornerback. And I thought those guys, once again, played great. It wasn't perfect. I mean, there was a 50-yard touchdown run in there, and Ole Miss moved the ball quite well. But again, it was kind of a bend but don't break style of defense, and it really paid off. And then in overtime, I mean, Ole Miss was back to, I mean, they had a kick a 57-yard field goal, and somehow they made it, but still, that was terrific what LSU's defense did.
And to be clear, I'm not saying that LSU won because of Ole Miss's mistakes or anything like that. Because, look, let's face it, Garrett Nussmeier did have some times where he was not playing his best.
No, I mean, he completed less than 50% of his passes. And in today's day and age of football, and when you're completing less than 50% of your passes, and LSU really didn't have a running game in this contest. Mm-hmm. They never were able to get Caden Durham or Josh Williams on track. A couple of decent runs, but most of the – and there were times that I thought that they were just bailing out on the run game. They just like, you know what, it's not happening. And then Nussmeier, who did have time to throw, one of our concerns going into the game, and I wrote about it at WWL.com, was Ole Miss came into that contest leading the nation in sacks with 24. The Rebels had zero sacks in that game. I mean, Nussmeier had time to throw. He just wasn't hitting his receivers. But, man, when he needed to make some plays, he did. And I said it after the USC game, and a lot of LSU fans were disappointed. And my two big takeaways from that game is, going back to USC, is that the defense is better than it was a year ago, and you'll always have a chance to win football games with Garrett Nussmeier as your quarterback. And we saw that play out against South Carolina, and again, we saw that play out again here with, even though LSU falls behind by double digits in both games, Nussmeier is able to stay the course, stay patient in there, and eventually deliver the big passes that they needed to get delivered. I mean, some of that touchdown pass to Aaron Anderson, he throws three quarters. A three-quarter delivery to Anderson, and he zips it in there. I mean, that's NFL stuff, what you saw out of Nussmeier. And Brian Kelly said it afterwards. It was his biggest growth that he's had in a single game during his time at LSU was in that game. And I'm sure Garrett Nussmeier learned a lot about himself, too, in that game.
What I think is so encouraging is that they are improving week to week.
Yes,
they
are.
And going in the right direction. All right, Jeff Palermo, we'll pick it up. We come back and we'll talk about what Brian Kelly had to say about the decision not to go for two. I thought it was interesting after the game when he was talking to the ABC reporter. He probably said the same thing to Gordy Rush. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, 722 Traffic Now, WWL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. You go to WWL.com, they got a great column, a great story from him about the LSU game. So when it comes to the two-point conversion, I got to admit, I was screaming, go for it, end this thing, end it. But Brian Kelly had some interesting things to say after, I presume he told Gordy Rush the same thing about why he decided to go for two, he decided to not go for two.
Well, I think you got to also go back in time here a little bit, because in 2022, when LSU beat Alabama, they decided to go for two once they had the opportunity and they were able to connect. But he felt like his team had battled. And again, they did, the only time they took the lead in this game was when Kyron Lacy scored the winning touchdown pass. I mean, think about it. They were trailing the entire game. They got down 10-0. And he felt that his team had battled so hard to get back, he didn't want to put it all on one play to determine whether to win or lose. So give Brian Kelly credit there. He went with, I mean, maybe the analytics tell you to do something different. Because what I was thinking as LSU was marching down the field there on that final touchdown drive, or on the game-tying touchdown drive, was that was a long drive. Ole Miss's defense was on the field for a long time. So part of your thinking is, hey, that Ole Miss team is a little tired, dejected after allowing two conversions on fourth down. Why don't you try to strike now while the iron is hot? But Brian Kelly looked at it a little differently, saying, hey, we have battled in this game. We have stuck with it. Let's not put all our chips in the middle of the table right here. Let's go into overtime. Let's see what happens. LSU's defense is playing well, especially when Ole Miss gets in the red zone. Maybe we can hold them to a field goal, and that's exactly what happened.
You know, what I heard him tell Molly McGrath was that we felt as though we, and the same thing that you just said, basically, we wanted to give our team played hard. We wanted to give them a chance to win it. I interpreted that as the defense. It's like, you know what? The defense played hard. I'm going to show them I got confidence in them. I'm going to give them a chance to win this game. And I think that says a lot going forward. You?
Well, it's just it's a huge turnaround from where it was a season ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked about it in my article. You, 706 total yards last year, the 55 points, the 34 missed tackles. Mm-hmm. It's what led to a complete overhaul of the defensive coaching staff last year. And it really was Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy that year, but the signature game of that season was that was the Ole Miss loss in late September, because it set the stage for the rest of the year that LSU's defense was no good and there was no chance. Remember, they had to bring Pete Jenkins out of retirement and bring him up to LSU to teach the defensive linemen where to line up. I mean, it was that bad. And to see where they've come, and again, as I mentioned in the last segment, far from perfect. This is not a top 25 defense in the country or anything like that.
But they're getting better.
They are getting better. They could put pressure on the quarterback. Braden Swinson is a Mike Dottiglia knows more about this than I do, but he looks like a first-round pick to me. I mean, he's got over seven sacks on the season. Whit Weeks has just flourished. We talked about Zy Alexander, Ashton Stamps. There's Greg Penn, the glue of the defense, as Brian Kelly called him. I mean, there's just a lot more to work with this defense compared to a year ago, but still a long way to go here. Two tough road games coming up at Arkansas and A&M.
But I see no evidence, no indication at all that LSU is going to take anybody or anything for granted and that they're not going to do anything but continue to work hard and improve. Thoughts?
No doubt about that. But we've seen it in college football. Anybody can beat anybody here over these next few weeks. So would not be surprised, Tommy. I'm not trying to damper anybody's spirits. Would not be surprised that LSU splits these two road games coming up. Win-loss, loss-win, either way, against A&M and Arkansas.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it, as always. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Quick break. We come back. We're going to take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Monday morning markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, here on WWL. All right, here we go, 7:43, 17 till 8. Time for Monday Morning Markets with Mark. Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. How you doing, Mark? Happy Monday.
And to you, sir, how are you doing?
I'm good. Well, I'm good after LSU, not so good after the Saints, but that's how it is. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down, right?
Okay, so what do you think about at least 2 days this week, and I'm speaking for up here where I am. The lows are in the 40s.
Ooh, very nice.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Thursday and Friday.
That's on the North Shore?
Wednesday. It is.
That's in Covington.
Really? I checked it this morning. 44 and like 47.
Well, there you go.
Isn't that nice? For a change, that's it. You got to pump the hose on yourself as soon as that happens.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Tell me what's going on with CPI, PPI.
Well, yeah, you know, Tom, last week, first of all, let me say, it seems like whatever's happening in the markets, they're taking the participants and probably more the institutional people than the retail people. What they're taking is decent news, and they're pushing markets higher. And I think, you know, the Dow closed at another record last week after the inflation news came out. I'll get to that in a second. But it's, you know, after everything is being weighed, it seems like, okay, the Fed is going to do just what it needs to do. All these things have to come true at once. It's like it's going to curb inflation. It's not going to raise interest rates, but it's going to continue to lower interest rates to ease the market, the pain on the market that they caused a couple of years ago. They are going to engineer a soft landing, which includes us not getting into a recession, and the unemployment rate is going to stay reasonably tame. It's like all that's going to happen. And I'm convinced that that's what they're interested in, and we're all interested in. But as far as, you know, are they going to be able to engineer all these things in an election year and everything else going on? We've got wars to worry about and you know, rapidly changing energy prices potentially and all these things. But it's like, well, what else would account for the Dow hitting all-time highs? And for the back to the retail people like you and me, it's like, okay, you look at your 401k. You say, what's going on? Oh, I'm pleasantly surprised. Look at that. And what it generally does, it invokes what's called the wealth effect. People look and they say, well, after all this is going on, I'm still being rewarded with decent returns in my portfolio. And I feel wealthier because I am. And maybe I could, you know, take that trip that I wanted to or buy this new, you know, whatever we need at the house. And because our investments or performing in a way that we'll have money that we'll need and we're providing for our retirement. So wealth effect tends to be very powerful in the markets. And this week, retail sales are coming out. I'm going to have to backtrack on this. Retail sales are coming out for September, and they're expected to be up 0.3%. So that is 3.6% up for the year. And just last month, they were up only 0.1%. So either we've got some enthusiasm that's been revitalized, as I was saying, into the markets, and maybe that'll happen with the retail sales. But backing up a second, we had the consumer price index for September come out, and the producer price index for September as well. So last week it came out. So the CPI doubled. They expected to come in at 0.1, and it came in at 0.2. So these numbers are very small. Nothing to be afraid of. We've seen them go back and forth like this. I don't think the price indexes are accelerating, so to speak, that they're going to start registering larger and larger numbers. So Wall Street kind of took that in stride. It's like if it's up 0.1%, that's a 1.2% annual rate, well below the Fed's proclaimed target of 2% on an annual rate. And this was up 0.2%, so that's a 2.4% annual rate. So, again, it's like, okay, inflation at a retail level is I wish it would go down. I wish we'd have a couple of negative numbers there that prices would actually fall. But we're not there yet. But at least it's tame, and the Fed's going to take credit for that. All the interest rate increases that it did, they stopped in July, not in 24, 23, and they just left well enough alone until we saw our interest rate drop at that last meeting. Out comes the PPI the day after producer prices, and it was supposed to be up by 0.1%. It came in flat, zero. Producer prices haven't risen, so says the PPI. So that's good news. The combination of which I think was a lot of enthusiasm for the markets, and they did what I was explaining before. They set new highs. But on the what's also in the news that seems to be ignored, Tommy, that all of I did a piece with Dave Cohen over last week about, you know, the layoffs and companies aren't hiring and they're not firing. But we've had enough announcements about layoffs, and Boeing came out just last week, Boeing to lay off 10% of its workforce. They're going to report a quarterly loss and on lower sales. We also had the first time jobless claims that jumped to its highest level in more than a year. I would think that would bring the market a little bit of pause, but it didn't. You know, so the people that are filing unemployment claims for the first time, that's the highest level in more than a year. What's going to come out this week? Well, we have industrial production that expected to be down, capacity utilization, how we're using our resources for output, that's expected to be down. Business inventories are expected to be down, as is housing starts and building permits expected to be. All that's coming out this week, coupled with some of the negative numbers that came out last week, and we're going to see if that's going to move the markets at all. At least it should give it pause. We shouldn't be hitting new highs again and again, because I think that's, you know, as soon as this, if this market starts to trip up a little bit, if unemployment begins to rise and so on, I think then we'd have a long way to fall. But mortgage rates posted their biggest jump in more than 6 months. The 10-year Treasury, which is carefully watched by the market, it rose back up to over 4%, which it had fallen when the anticipated moves by the Fed were going to be more aggressive. They were expected to lower interest rates more for the rest of the year. And I think that's been put on pause, too, because of all that's going on. And I think they're backing off against that employment report that was released a couple of weeks ago, higher than normal. And, Tom, you just got a lot of – there's been enough economic news, but it's cross currents. You'll get a big stretch of disappointing ingredients in the market. Then you'll have a couple of items that'll get everybody's attention. And look at this shiny object over here that tends to be encouraging. But put them all together, and it seems like the minuses are outweighing the pluses. But the market continues to go higher. The Fed meets in 24 days, and there's an 86% chance of them lowering rates by 25 basis points. Everybody in the market is off of – just about everybody – is off of another 50 basis point lowering, which was deeply anticipated just a couple of weeks ago. And with all this news coming out, I think it put the Fed on pause on really what to do for the rest of the year.
So when you say, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. It's Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. I'm just still trying to get a handle on, I know it's mixed, but who's it good for? Who's it bad for? Is it good? It's bad with inflation, and I don't think prices are going to come down. The inflation rate may be coming down. But then if it's good for the 401k, does that mean it's only good if you take your gains out? And if you do, what's that going to do with Wall Street? It's complicated. Mark will help us when we come back. 504-260-1870 if you have any questions or comments. Traffic now, WWL. 7:56 and a half. Quickly back to Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, Monday Morning Markets. with Mark. So, Mark, I'm trying to figure out inflation. The rate is down, but the prices are not down. Will they come down? And if not, does that mean people take their gains from their 401k cash out? And if that happens, what happens to the stock market? And if I might add on another question, then that means you're going to have more money chasing the same amount of goods, which is going to make inflation worse. Am I wrong on any of this or not?
Well, let me, for on your inflation thing, you're right. It's been going up by smaller amounts. And we were talking about every now and then, like PPI over the past couple of years have had a couple of negative indicators. That mm-hmm. means that prices actually went down, at least on a wholesale level. Mm-hmm. And the Fed would say, well, if we really want to knock inflation down or knock price, physically knock the prices down, you're going to need negative numbers. Meaning when they go out and buy that basket of goods and report what the collective price is, that the prices would have fallen. And if you recall, we were talking about, because they were, well, we're going to have a 6% unemployment rate. Well, that'll knock prices down because people won't be working and they can't buy things. Well, part of the soft landing is that we're going to have these incremental moves up on inflation. They're very small, 0.1% and 0.2%. But we're going to keep everybody working, and that's better for a healthy economy. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the amount of negative news, I think, should have given the markets a little bit more pause than it did. And it's hitting these highs. And as far as taking money out of the 401k, I'm not advocating timing the market, because mm-hmm. you and I have been through that a long time. Right. You know, it's like that's a fool's errand. So it's just what we have been saying over the course of the year, this back and forth with the direction, guessing the direction of interest rate. We've been playing this song since March. Mm-hmm. They finally lowered, but immediately it was like, well, maybe you shouldn't have lowered. All these second guesses. And I meant to say 86% chance that they'll lower by 25 basis points. The other 14%, they're saying no change. Mm-hmm. So some people believe, and not so much the insignificant amount, is that the Fed is not going to do anything for the rest of the year with respect to rates. So for people that were trying to save money, I mean, if you're looking at your investments, just know what you own and understand what it is. And if for the refinances and to save major money over interest rates that were up last year, you kind of missed the low point. If we were greedy and saying, oh, it's going to go lower, you missed it because these rates have kicked back up. But that's, you and I cover it every Friday, Tommy. It's the easiest way to save some money. It's money on the table. And now that rates have fallen, that would be the time to take advantage of it. I mean, nobody knows what tomorrow is going to bring, but the rates have changed significantly since a year ago. So that would be a place to just save some money. It's free money to you. It's taking it out of financial institution.
Thank
you,
Mark.
We just got to keep watching.
So, all right, sir.
Talk to you later.
We will. We'll talk to you Friday when you help us manage our money. Mark Roser, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. We'll talk about housing in the city when we come back.